On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we ask for your biggest hot takes and predictions for the Raiders since the season is almost here. We look at five Raiders players that must deliver this season. The depth chart is out, and we get balls deep in Raiders versus Chargers week one. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. Let's have some fun today. Record-breaking heat today in Long Beach. 109 degrees Fahrenheit, breaking the record set in 1988.
That's rough.
Hot stuff.
It's been rough business this weekend. I was on my couch. I had two fans, right? Mm-hmm. I had two fans went in this direction. I had one of the taller fans in front of me. So basically I had one fan for each nut and then one for the shaft. And it worked fine. It worked. Yeah. I don't know if I didn't move.
Well, to me, it's just yet more proof that God is a Raiders fan, because we are just 4 days away from Raiders coming into our neck of the woods in Los Angeles to take on the LA Chargers, which is, of course, as we know, a home game. So not only is SoFi Stadium going to be full of Raiders fans and be a Raider home game, but it's going to feel like Las Vegas outside in triple degree heat. So literally it's a home game inside the stadium, outside the stadium. God is a Raider fan, and he has blessed Southern California with a Vegas ambiance.
Yeah, we're used to this heat. That's what Josh McDaniel said, that, oh, we're used to it. We practice in this every day. I mean, that's why, like, if you have errands to run, like this weekend, I had some errands to run. That shit was done 9:30. I was done with them. And anything that didn't get done by 9:30, you weren't getting done that day.
Yeah. And then after about 10:15, it's like, all right, I'm either in a body of water or just propelled by two fans.
Every single time.
So question of the day, and we will pin this question down in the comment section. We like your answer. Again, last time to speak your mind, because we got a game in just a few days. What is your biggest and best Raiders prediction or hot take for the upcoming season? So once the season starts, our season starts September 11th on Sunday, then all your predictions don't matter anymore because you already watched one game. So this is your last chance.
Look at creative here, guys.
Have fun. So we put this up on YouTube, and I got a couple ones I want to share with you. L. Brown Holio, if the right side of our line figures itself out, we're in the Super Bowl.
That's a big if.
It's a big if, and that's also a big then, because I think our DBs will have to deliver, our
interior defensive line,
right? Like, still a lot of questions around that defense. And also, what does figure itself out? Does figure itself out mean that they've improved leaps and bounds and McDaniels can lean
run.
On them? Figure itself out mean that Josh McDaniels schemes around them and they don't torpedo us? Those are two very different versions of figures itself out.
Yeah, because if there's still a liability and you have to shorten up your playbook, you can still run an effective mix of plays, but they're going to be pretty much right around the same stuff. Screens, quick passes, stuff like that. A lot of play action, just get the ball out, like we were talking earlier, to get the ball out quick. So you can't really do a lot of the deep routes, stuff like that, to hurt teams that are creeping on you. Shorten the field, man. Like it's like in the red zone, when you shorten the field like that, it's harder to throw. Well, when you shorten the field because your opponent knows you're going to throw it quickly, it's harder to complete passes.
Mark Yuckum says Mark Davis finally stops going to his childhood barber by week 6. That's a hot take.
Yeah.
Same haircut for 60 years, and he's going to stop now?
Mark Yoakum. Is that Dwight Yoakum's kid or brother?
He's as poetic as his pops. I wonder if, like, what makes week 6 that one? We play the Texans.
It's a bye week, I think, right?
No. It's week 6.
It's our bye week.
My week's in a bye week. So he's like, he finally has 2 weeks off to go find a proper barber, because, Guys worth guys holding billion-dollar franchises don't have the time.
He's flirting with one already, I think. I think he's flirting.
Just flirting a little bit.
Hey, man, I haven't had hair in a long time, so I haven't had to go to a barber. But my my chick's son is a barber, and he does really good work. Man, you don't even want to know the politics involved in barbering.
It's barbaric, would you say?
Yeah, you know what?
Barbarism.
What is it? Punctilious.
You would be punctilious in assuming that.
Yeah, man. Because
what movie is that from?
Ooh,
put that one down in the comment section.
Actually, in my sports psychology class, I had to write about a sports movie, and I wrote it on that movie and the evolution of the character, the main character.
Yeah,
good movie.
Great movie. One of the funniest movies out there.
Oh God. So
dictionary salesman, huh? You would be punctilious in assuming that. Nathan Balloon, the entire AFC West makes the playoffs. So that means there are no other wild cards other than the divisional champion and then the three AFC West teams. I guess it's, but that means like, what's the second best team in some of these divisions that would have to be out?
Ravens
win the North.
I don't think the Browns are going to do much, dude. I think the Browns are going to probably win 7 games. Because you got Brissett for 11, and you're telling me that Watson coming off not having played in 2 years is going to win all of his games? Like, come on, dude. Yeah. They're probably going to win 7 games. Eight games tops.
Colts win the South, right? Bills win the East.
That means the Titans don't win.
Titans don't make it, right? Which, that's possible. Maybe there's a big regression there, right?
Yeah. I mean, you lose A.J. Brown and you put Robert Woods coming off of ACL.
Bengals.
Yeah, the Bengals. Like, who doesn't make it? The Ravens? The Bengals? Like, the Bengals made it to the Super Bowl last year. And the Ravens were the best team in football until Lamar got hurt. Like, you know, that's a rough division, too. I mean, it's... We have to take care of business outside of our division. And we play the AFC West, who's got a couple of really good teams, too.
Well, there's a couple of things that can go the AFC West way. I mean, you've got Joe Burrow with the appendicitis. Like, it's like, is he recovered from that? Like, is he taking hits in practice? Like, that could semi-torpedo the Bengals a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Does everything work with the Colts, right? Like, does that whole division just suck, right? And there's no second team that can come out of it.
Yeah, man. There's always some injuries that make a big difference in the standings. There's always something that happens. So there's always these things that we think are going to work out great. Like, look at Julio Jones. Going over to the Titans last year, I'm like, oh my God, Julio Jones and AJ Brown. And Julio Jones was dog shit. He didn't do anything. Yeah. So, you know, it ended up working out for him because they rode Derrick Henry until he broke his foot. But other than that, I mean, there's always something that happens. You know, we lose Ruggs. We could have won even more games if we had him. Had at least a better flowing offense earlier than what we found towards the end of the year. But we'll see, man. That's going to be a tough thing to have all of us make it.
With that being said, Vernon Cochran, this division is a toss-up, but the Donkeys finish last. I want the Raiders to finish first. That's the one I think is the most likely. Broncos finish last in the AFC West. I'm pretty confident in that. I don't know what the odds are of the Broncos finishing last, but I head to Vegas tomorrow. I may have to put some money on that.
That's right.
I really think so.
That's right. Well, look, we've talked about it. The Broncos lost their defensive coordinator. They have the pieces still there, yes, but you have to have the mind to go in there and put those pieces in the right places, right?
Fangio is the most, like, either him or Belichick, when they touch a defense, it just drastically alters for the better. Like, he's one of the few coordinators that are like that. Is also, the cat running away because it's spurring your advances?
No, he's fucking being a dick right now. So, also, you know, the Broncos lose their best pass catcher, and Noah Fant, they traded him away.
Yep.
I'm not sold on these unproven, you know, Jerry Jeudy, Sutton. Like, Patrick. I'm not sold on these guys.
First time head coach,
dude. And this guy's a freaking nutcase, dude. This freaking guy. I think he was with the Bills 1 year, and they were freaking terrible when he was there under Marinelli. He was with the Jags, and they were dog shit down there. Like, yeah, he went to Green Bay, but dude, he wasn't the freaking OC in Green Bay, dude. That was freaking Aaron Rodgers was the OC in Green Bay. Yeah.
So that's our question of the day. Last chance to do it before the season starts. What is your biggest and best Raiders prediction or hot take for the upcoming season? We'll pin it down in the comment section. Y'all let us know. All right, so with the season nearly underway, I want to take a look at five important players that their progression can make or break this season. And not just that, but the perception of those players and how they can fix it, how it changes, what it matters, that kind of stuff. So obviously we'll start with, you know, the guy who's got the most spotlight on him every single year, the quarterback on an NFL team, Derek Carr.
Derek motherfucking Carr.
When all this good stuff started happening to the Raiders, Davante Adams comes over, you know, Josh McDaniels seems like, you know, some stability there, a guy that knows what he's doing. So many comments from Raiders fans aren't, oh, this is awesome. Oh, this is great. They're all like you, Soto, where they're like, well, Carr's out of excuses now. Carr better deliver. Carr better do something. And it's like, okay, but how about just being excited that we're adding weapons, and instead of it always being a Carr make or break? A Carr, like, he's been the only thing consistent on this team for the last 8 seasons. So it's like, yes, right? Like, his game needs to elevate because he's got some awesome things going for him. But this idea that it's like, all right, no more excuses for Carr. It's like, how about no more excuses for the team?
Both. It's both. We saw it last year with the Titans. This is a quarterback-driven league. In the playoffs, your quarterback has to go out there, and the quarterback has to win you games. If you have a quarterback that you can't rely on to make those throws and win games, you can be the best team in the AFC, and you're going to get bounced. Mm-hmm. You have to have those guys that you can rely on when everything is called correctly, when the defense is right, when the playmakers are in the right position to make the plays. You have to have that quarterback who overcomes all of that and makes those plays happen. He's been streaky. Carr has been up and down. He makes those plays sometimes. Sometimes he doesn't. The reason why I'm saying, okay, this is now he's got to put up or shut up, is because I've seen this up and down play. And yeah, granted, he hasn't had the best players all the time, but it's not like he's had scrubs all the time. You know, he's had good players and that have played well in other places, and guys that are known to be some of the best in their position. But now he has the A1. He has the A number one receiver in the NFL. He has Davante Adams.
He still can't believe it.
It's crazy, right?
He still can't believe it.
He's there. His play now, not just having the better weapons, but his play needs to be elevated now. He needs to be that guy that can not only buck the odds and be that scrappy underdog to get us to 10 wins, 8 wins, 7 wins, 9 wins. Like, no, we need that his play to elevate us even more. And if he can be that guy, great. But we're going to find out this year if he's that guy or not.
I just saw so many people this last season saying, like, well, Carr changed my mind. Like, Carr proved it this season that he can be the guy. It's like, yeah, he was better at some stuff, but he was worse at some stuff. It was a terrible turnover season for him. Awful. Yeah.
That can't happen.
You know, he got better. You know, he got better moving around in the pocket, right? His deep ball got better. Like, he got better at some stuff. He got worse at some stuff.
He got better.
But the team was better. Because the team was better. Won 10 games and went to the playoffs. Carr got the credit. When the team sucked ass and we go 4-12, Carr got the blame. So, like, that's the thing here that I always keep bringing up, because it rings so true, is that Carr's going to get the credit. Carr's going to get the blame. And, like, And I feel like that's terrible analysis by us, because then we're not actually finding the real problems, right? Like, okay, yeah, Carr's got to work on his turnovers. Yeah, let's make sure his deep ball still good. But, like, if we put everything on Carr's shoulders and say it's all him, then we're letting other people off the hook. And that's what I don't want to do. I don't want to say, like, well, no. It was Carr's fault. It was like, no.
We got four or five other guys to talk about. And this is just him specifically. Mm-hmm. If he goes down there and he pushes the ball down to the red zone and throws another interception this year, he did not progress from where he was last year. That's the same shit he's been doing, you know, bogging down in the red zone. There has to be some difference. There has to be some progression somewhere. I'm saying he needs to be 2-1. He's got to be 2-1. And if you're a good quarterback,
touchdowns
at all,
to interceptions.
Yeah, touchdowns to interceptions. Yeah. He's got to be at least 2-1. You can't be looked at in a passing league on a passing team when you throw almost 5,000 yards and you throw 23 touchdowns.
Do you want to see Carr be 2-1 at like a 40-20 ratio or like a 24-12?
I would take 30-15 because if he's still throwing 24, it's not going to work for us, man. Because when you have the red zone targets like Devontae, like Hunter, and like Waller, you have to be throwing for those touchdowns.
Well, speaking of Darren Waller, the all-pro tight end coming off of injury last season, right? Missed five games. Only, I think, practiced once this offseason because of a hammy injury, right? And obviously he's getting a new agent and that whole extension talk kind of hanging
Drew
over.
Drew Rosenhaus, baby.
Yeah, right. He's bringing the house.
He's the big man.
So this is a huge year for Darren Waller because he broke out 3 seasons ago, delivered 2 seasons ago, hiccup this season, and everything around him is like, oh, I think he's holding out. Oh, he's so unhappy, even though he's given no signs of that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a big, like, screw all the distractions, screw what happened last season. I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to deliver. And you guys are going to beg me to pay me and make me the highest paid tight end in football.
Yeah, for Darren Waller, it's all about putting points up on the board. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need to be the chain mover. That's what we have Third and Renfro for. He doesn't need to be that elite blocker. He needs to be that matchup nightmare where it counts the most, and that's the red zone. He has to be that guy. And that's what I'm looking at for him is not only to be capable of being that guy, but also be vocal enough to say, listen, give me the fucking ball. Draw the play up for me. Everyone in the building knows I'm getting the ball and I'll get it done. That's what I need to see different. This whole good little soldier biz doesn't work. You need to have those alphas. You have to have that alpha presence to be able to push and to be able to tell people, hey, I'm the man. Fucking the Keyshawn, give me the damn ball. When I am your best option in the red zone, I want him to be vocal about it. I want him to be vocal about getting the ball more because we didn't throw the ball nearly enough.
As vocal as he'll ever get, he's been vocal on that, right? When he went on Busting with the Boys, he was talking about the red zone issues. Like you never, ever, 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 ever hear Waller complain. And that's the closest thing we've got to hearing him complain. And it's like, yeah, we're all wondering why your 6'6" ass isn't schemed up and isolated to make like slam dunks on these 5'9" corners. Like we're all wondering why that's not the case. And Waller also said in the exact same interview that him and Carr have the relationship where he can be like, you fucked up or I fucked up. Like, let's have that hard conversation to get there. So even though we're obviously not seeing it publicly, Waller like pumping his chest and saying, give me the ball. The communication to that effect, I believe, is still happening.
And I believe a lot of that blossoming of that of these players individually, as far as their voices go, I think it's a lot of the empowerment that are being given by Josh McDaniels. They came from a coach who was kind of a dictator, right? Like you do this, you do that, you stay in your line, you stay this, you do that. Well, Josh McDaniels seems to be now more a guy that more empowers the player and wants to hear their voice. And lets them know, hey, it's not a bad thing if you voice your opinion. It's not bad. Even if you're being a little bit selfish, if that's what's best for the team, because look, I have no problem with Darren Waller saying, I need to get the ball more in the red zone because I'm your best option. Because he's not wrong.
Trayvon Merrick. He was a great safety blanket for us last season. That's what Gus Bradley needs out of his free safety, right? Keep everyone in front of you. Don't let anyone beat you deep. Don't be too aggressive because we don't want you people going over the top of you. And that's what he did. You almost never heard his name because he wasn't getting pick sixes or blowing up anybody, but he wasn't getting beat, which is the role that he needed. And for a rookie, it was great.
Yeah.
Great. Second round rookie, he did as much as you can ask for a guy like that, right? And so now in Patrick Graham's new system, what's his role going to be and what do you expect there?
What I'm looking for from him is just more plays being made, more playmaking from him.
Hearing his name, but good.
But good. Like he in this system is going to, Patrick Graham is going to put him in positions to be a ball hawk, not just to be a safety blanket, but be a ball hawk. And we need to see him catch those opportunities. If he gets around the 5 interception range, that's going to be a great season for him because they're not going to be throwing to him a lot anyway. Cause when I watched some tape from last year, he has crazy range. That's why a lot of quarterbacks didn't throw his way. They threw underneath him, but they didn't really throw. I think he had one of the lowest percentages of balls thrown at his covered man as a safety because they just never threw to him. Him getting 5 interceptions with such a low throw to percentage, that's going to be huge. And I think he can do it.
That's why I'm very curious what Graham wants out of him and how he's going to perform it, because he's proven he can be that safety blanket, which is nothing to sneeze at, right? Like, obviously we want interceptions. We want big plays. We want big hits breaking, you know, destroying that guy in the slant coming in. Right. But like having someone that like basically never gets beat deep and can cover half the field, that's pretty damn valuable, especially with the quarterbacks we're going to be playing against.
He also covered Abram a lot too. Let's not lose sight of that. Maybe not with the ball in the air, but after the ball was completed, he went in and he made a lot of those tackles.
So for this next one, we could have just said the entire O-line, the right side of the O-line, all the tackles. We went with Jermaine Illuminor because it looks like he's going to be starting as our right tackle. And he kind of ended up as just last man standing. Alex Leatherwood completely whiffed, got cut. Brennan Parker got paid $3 million, gets injured, and he's kind of just availability is the best ability. And here he is. Good luck, veteran journeyman who's now a starting right tackle for what could potentially be a top 5 offense.
Yeah. I mean, there are very few like really good right tackles in the NFL. Normally, your right tackle is
there's
probably
like 5 teams that are like stoked on their right tackle.
Yeah. So if you look at it from that perspective, I don't think we're in that bad of shape. And I said it before, Bill Belichick wants steady Eddies over the up and down guys, right? And Illuminor is just that. He's not bad. He's not good. He's a steady Eddie. You know what you're going to get from him. Is he going to make those crazy pancake blocks? Is he going to be able to peel off on a double team and get a linebacker or a DB down the field? Probably not. But
steady
he's not make
Eddie
those...
is the most optimistic description of Illuminor I've ever heard. The dude hasn't been able to make practice squads.
I get it.
He's been cut from practice squads.
What I'm saying is, in this preseason, that's what we've seen from him, being a steady Eddie. That's what I'm saying. And that's what I've seen. Even when he's been playing on the left side against ones, he's been a steady Eddie. He hasn't been great. He hasn't been, you know, a wall over there. But he's been a steady Eddie. And if he can continue to be that steady Eddie with us on the right side, I think we'll be okay. And I don't need him to, you know, make these super athletic plays and stuff like that. Just be a steady guy and block your assignment. You don't have to do anything extra than that. Just block your assignment.
Yeah, I'm blown away that he's our starter.
I know, dude.
In his career, dude.
Rory fucking loves this guy. He fucking loves him.
Because they're both British.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, he enjoys teas and crumpets. Let him be our starter. Great.
Dude, the thing is, you see what my expectations of Illuminor are when I say my hopes are for him to be a steady Eddie.
Yeah. Because he hasn't proven to be a steady Eddie outside of anything. Like, he's proven just be a nothing. He's proven to be like... Dude, the Jaguars released him from their practice squad. He wasn't good enough to make the Jacksonville Jaguars practice squad. The worst team in football. He wasn't good enough to make their practice squad. And now he is our week one starter.
the practice, the worst team in football 2 years in a row. I do. Before we move forward to our next guy,
yeah.
I wanted to address something that we talked about last week.
Please, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. We were talking about maybe a misstep by the front office by putting Leatherwood at right tackle and not having him play guard. Reports come out that Leatherwood refused to play guard, that he only wanted to play tackle. That kind of leads into some of the head case stuff that we had talked about as well. I was talking to Sanjeet. We were like DMing each other, dick pics, stuff like that. Whatever, no big deal.
Normal stuff.
And normal stuff. And then we were going back and forth because he was a big Leatherwood backer. Mm-hmm. I never was a Leatherwood fan. Roll tape. And I said, man, look, it's like if you hire somebody for marketing in the marketing department and they only want to work in accounting and you try them out in accounting and they just can't count, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, what are you going to do? They're better at something else, but they only want to do something that they're not good at. You're kind of stuck.
Well, and first off, that report leaked for a reason. And I imagine someone in the Raiders leaked it to the media to make it look like Leatherwood was the fuck up and not the Raiders. That would be my guess, right?
Does it mean two, it's false either?
Two, it's still on the Raiders who got nothing out of the value of a former first-round pick. Right? Like we can point the finger all day long. Leatherwood sucked. It's all on him. The end of the day, that first round pick, we got nothing, right? We paid 56% of his salary for 1 year of him being a crappy guard and tackle, and then nothing. Like we got nothing out of him, right? So let's say for the sake of argument, that is the case where Leatherwood straight up said like, no, I'm not going to play guard. If you're McDaniels or Ziegler, you say, F you. Yeah, you are. We're going to get something out of you. We're putting you at guard. And you're going to like it. Like there's that other part as well where, yeah, again, he was extremely hard to deal with and he did get worse and he did regress and he did suck. But who's left holding the bag? The Raiders. And who's ever left holding the bag are the ones that need to be responsible for themselves. Leatherwood's going to be fine. He's getting his guaranteed money. He doesn't give a shit if he's cut, gets picked up, traded. He's getting his money all the same. The Raiders got left with the bag. Therefore, the responsibility is on the Raiders.
You got to know when to hold them. Know when to fold him. You fold that shit. Done.
Last one. Divine Diablo. On a team full of awesome names. Still my coolest name.
Just
the
best name out there.
Divine Diablo. The beautiful Satan. Second-year player. Looks like Patrick Graham's system is a great place for kind of a speedy off-the-ball outside linebacker, which Diablo can be. You can rush. You can cover. Especially with Perryman, who is such a great tackling machine in the middle, but not great in coverage. Mm-hmm. Diablo is the perfect kind of balance to that. I think in a lot of third downs, like Perryman won't be even on the field.
It'll be Jalen Brown.
And again, the biggest jump traditionally for a player is first year to second year. He's going into a second year.
I just if he can be almost like the linebacker version of Merrick. Of that, let me patrol from the middle in. Let me be that guy. Let me be able to cover these. Just the tight ends in this league, man. There are some freaking tight ends in this league that are just freaks of nature. You're looking at this guy and you're like, how do they make you? You look like from like, I saw a picture of like, dude, fucking like guys like Freiermuth. If you take a look from Pittsburgh, you take a look at a picture of this guy like, damn, this is a pretty in shape dude. Like, this guy's probably like 6'1, whatever, 6 foot. That's like 6'6. These are just huge, massive guys that can run and they can catch. And it's like, yeah, having a 6'6 athletic tight end is not anything new anymore in the NFL.
Yeah,
they're all over the place. So you have to have guys like Diablo at linebacker who can move. But my big jump for Diablo would be in run defense, because you can scheme around one linebacker, especially one who is as good as Perryman against the run, but you have to have another guy that can be that dash guy, that guy that can shoot the gap.
Yeah, I want him being super disruptive. You know what I mean? Getting in that backfield, taking on that fullback, getting in the tight end's face, little speedster off the edge. That'd be nice. So the first depth chart of the season was released. And it's more or less what we expected. A few maybe sort of surprises. They went with a 4-3 on the defense. They went with a one tight end, two wide receiver, two running back setup, but, you know, whatever. Anything jump out at you on this lineup?
I thought
Illuminar at starting right tackle, I think.
I mean, we already talked
about
Mumford
was kind of maybe in that mix. It looks like John Simpson starting at guard.
Mumford getting hurt.
Dylan Parnum's the only backup for the entire interior, right? Both guards and center.
Barton played guard.
Barton played guard. I thought it
was... Barton
played
guard.
So he's tackle and guard.
He's tackle guard. Parham is guard center.
Okay.
And Mumford's. Mumford can play guard too because he played guard last year or 2 years ago in college. He played guard. Okay. So they're all flexible. They all have some position flexibility. I thought Hankins would be a starter.
Me too.
That's one that jumps out to me.
Yeah, Bilal Nichols and Andrew Billings. Billings are the two defensive tackles in this thing. And again, these depth charts, you can fib, right?
Yeah, that's like the depth chart for the fucking media. Like the actual depth chart. We'll see. That's like fucking Pickens being the third fucking quarterback in the Pittsburgh. It's like, okay, that's what you put out there, but is he really the third freaking quarterback? I mean, Malcolm Kuntz being behind Farrell. Farrell hasn't done jack shit on the defensive line. I think he's just a core special teamer. I don't know. Those kind of jump out at me a little bit.
Are you buying this running back depth? Jacobs 1, Brandon Bolden 2, Amir Abdullah 3, Zamir White 4, and then Britton Brown in that crucial fifth running back slot that you need so bad.
I think they put Amir Abdullah at 3 because he's the third down back. I think an early down back that is kind of like a pass catcher and a runner. I think Zamir White and Bolden are going to be that guy.
I disagree. I think Jacobs is going to be the first and second down guy, kind of main guy. And Zamir kind of does the same thing. Like he just kind of poaches some of Jacobs' carries. But Abdullah has a very specific role, right? Bolden has a very specific role. Whereas White and Jacobs are the two kind of semi-do-everything dudes-ish. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I have him at number 4, because his role is kind of just backing up Josh as opposed to a specific role.
Yeah, I honestly think that White and Bolden are going to get similar work. I think Jacobs is just going to get like run into the ground. They're going to use him as much as they can.
If they do go with a 4-3-4 defense, they have Rock Ya-Sin and Nate Hobbs as the two starting outside corners. Do you think that's the case? Do you think Hobbs plays outside if it's a two cornerback situation?
I think it's depending on the set that they use. But I think I could see him lining up a bunch of different. I don't think it's going to be like a Richard Sherman where he only lines up on one side. He only covers one thing. He only does one thing. Right. I think they're going to move Hobbs around because I think he's that special player.
So the offensive line, Colt Miller, John Simpson, Andre James, Lester Cotton, Sr., Jermaine Illuminor, all the wide receivers and tight ends are all pretty standard there. Defensive tackle, we've been over. DBs, we've been over. I'm gonna be surprised if that 53-man roster that they released last week, if it makes it all the way to Sunday. Like I thought for sure. All right, we're gonna bring in the right tackle. Britton Brown's gonna be gone.
Yeah, man. Still we're gonna bring eight in offensive linemen.
Someone on defense and Sam Webb's gonna be gone. Right. Like I thought, okay, they're just like they like these guys. We'll keep them on the practice squad, but like. They're going to suit up 6 freaking running backs, including the fullback on Sunday.
I mean, not necessarily. And then they still have to have a game roster isn't 53, you know? So, I don't know, man. There's going to be some finagling up and down from the practice squad, stuff like that. But, I mean, we were talking about it earlier. Renfro's the punt returner still.
I was just going to show that. Hunter Renfro.
Come on.
Returner. Hunter Renfro.
Fucking Rory's shitting himself right now.
No. One of our best players doesn't get the ball in his hands more often. That's stupid. I hate that.
Dude, and freaking like Tim Brown just doubled down on that during the game, the last game. He's like, yeah, I don't understand why you don't put good players back there. It's like, you want the ball to get in your best player's hands. I'm like, yeah. Oh, shit, take that, Roy.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. And how often do guys get hurt returning punts? Like, and then where do you draw that line, right? It's like, do you have them not play that often because they might get hurt? It's like,
the blockers get more hurt and the gunners get more hurt than anybody else.
It's not like he's a wedge buster.
Right? You know what I mean? Like a University of Colorado in the 1980s is like a wedge buster and shit.
I was just watching the Florida State LSU game on Sunday.
Wild game, dude.
Wild game. Two muffed punts by LSU that cost him that game. So it's not even just like, well, how many good returns is Hunter going to give us? Okay, well, what about not fuck-ups? Like, he's so sure-handed. And also, there's a fake. He'll knock someone's block off and be a free safety. Yeah. Like, forget there's that. So much more than just like, well, what's his return average and blah, blah, blah. It's like, all right, everything that Hunter does back there is better than average. And he does positives. It in so many different ways.
Yeah. Even freaking Brian Kelly after the game, he's like, because some of the reporters came late to the press conference. It's like, yeah, we're going to charge you $10. We have a party at the end of the year. And then one of the reporters, like some broad, was like, yeah, maybe if you would have won, we would have been on time.
Kelly didn't miss a beat either. He was just like, well, I don't think it has anything to do with being on time. It's just about you know, winning and losing, just put on time. It's like, well, you don't really get to talk shit, Kelly, you know?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You talk shit, they're going to fucking get it back at you. I mean, because look, who knows what that stadium's like to go from the press box down to the freaking the interview room. You know, sometimes it's pretty hairy. I know it's gotten better since the renovation at the Coliseum where USC plays. They have more elevators now, so it's easier for the press to get down to the interview room. But who knows? You know, it could be a nightmare.
I'm not looking to defend that. I think they just like took their time because they lost.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what it was.
You guys fucking suck.
Come on. All right. Raiders, Chargers, week one coming up. Encore of the...
One of the best games ever. One of the best games ever. That's like, a great game.
I think almost universally considered the best game of the season that week. Oh, yeah. Especially with like the stakes involved, the whole what happens if the tie and the Steelers involved. The, you know, literally down to the last second of overtime. The like 9 fourth and longs that the Chargers had to convert to like even get it to that point. Repeat of that game. How much different is this Chargers team now compared to the Chargers team we played in week 18? There's the offensive, obvious, right?
Khalil Mack. Yeah. Offensively, I don't think they're too much different. And I don't think they needed to be too much different. Defensively, I honestly don't know how much Khalil Mack has in the tank right now. He hasn't been. Really? He hasn't shot. Been. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying he's shot. I'm just not.
Juan Soto says Khalil Mack is no more. Shot. Done. Last leg. One foot in the pressure cooker, the other in the frying pan.
That's not what I said at all.
That's what I heard.
What I will say is Khalil Mack hasn't been Khalil Mack in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I think the Bears got 1 year of that Khalil Mack, and then they got, you know, couple of years of him being a little bit injured, maybe playing a little bit more injured. I don't know if he's going to be that guy. I don't know. I'm sure he is an upgrade to the old, let's say, Melvin Ingram. But how much more? Because Melvin Ingram, you know, when he was playing on the opposite of Bosa, he was a motherfucker. You know, what's that going to look like? We haven't seen that Khalil Mack. Not to say that he can't be that guy or he's healthy now or whatever. But we haven't seen him be that guy in a couple of years.
That's still the scariest thing of this on this team. It's not Justin Herbert. It's not Keenan Allen. It's
Khalil Mack and Bosa.
Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack on either side of this line of ours, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, am I worried about Illuminor? Yeah. I'm worried about him against Colton Miller. I'm worried about our best lineman against these two.
Do you really think they're going to line up on opposite sides? I think they're going to put them both on Illuminor's side and be like, all right, motherfucker, try to chip one of us and see how that works out for you.
Yeah.
I think that's what I would do. And they had a lot of success last year doing that with, what was that dude's name that we got that ended up getting injured? The outside linebacker that they had, Kyle something or other. We got him as a pass rusher, and he got put on IR.
Oh, I don't remember.
Farnsworth or Framingham or something like that. That was his name.
The only person I remember from injury that I miss is Phylon. Phylon.
He'd be good for up the middle. But that's the main difference for me. J.C. Jackson, okay, yeah, they've had guys in the secondary before. We'll see how J.C. Jackson does outside of that Bill Belichick system. But the biggest change that I'm
– Well, if J.C. Jackson is even playing, right? Like,
true.
He's injured. So we got so according to Sports Illustrated, the report from Staley is J.C. is working out. He's trending positive, whatever that means.
Yeah,
he's working out hard. He's in good spirits. I think over this weekend we'll be able to tell you more about his practice prospects for next week. He's making good progress. When that walking boot comes off, I think we'll have a lot stronger sense of where he stands.
When? He's still in a walking
he's
boot?
He's still in a walking boot.
He ain't playing.
Now, I wouldn't play him. This isn't from today.
17 games.
Yeah.
Oh.
But it was 2 to 4 weeks, and that was 2.5 weeks ago.
I wouldn't play him, honestly. And it's not because it's against us. It's like, why? Like, why do you have to play him now? Like, make sure that he's healthy because you have 17 games to play. Mm-hmm. The worst thing you can do is put him back before he's healthy and he has a lingering injury the entire season. That's like the best case scenario because he's going to be – the worst case scenario is he re-injures it or he injures it worse and he's out an extended period of time.
It'd be a great blessing if J.C. Jackson's not there. Like – I think they would have rolled with, all right, Jackson, you handle Devontae one-on-one. Let's roll that dice, our best corner against their wide receiver, and then maybe we can start doubling Waller and Hunter. I'm guessing that kind of would have been their strategy. Now it's not even an option, right? Now it's like we don't have, like, there's no one we even sort of believe can go one-on-one with Devontae.
My big difference is that I'm interested in looking at is what's the difference in the coaching?
Mm-hmm.
That's... We
not
we
a lot, right?
Yet. It's the same coach.
Like, do the odds, trust the process, the numbers will get to the mean, right? He's one of those guys. He just like do what the formula says over and over.
Yeah, regardless of how the flow of the game is going and all this stuff. And we'll see, man. I mean, they scored a lot of points last year, but they also gave away a lot of shit at the end.
They're still the Chargers, right?
Chargers.
So still the biggest worry is Bosa and Khalil on that line against our line. Josh McDaniels was asked about those two at a presser today. Here's what he had to say.
It's not easy. You know, they're two incredible football players. You know, and again, I could say that about a lot of guys on their team. You know, they have a tremendous amount of talent. This is probably one of the most talented teams we're going to play all year, if not the most talented. Yep. Competed against both of them multiple times. You know, and thankfully never on the same field at the same time. So, you know, you could kind of put maybe more attention to one than the other, if you will. You know, you gotta do a good job. There's no shortcuts around this one. You know, you got to do a good job of using your techniques and playing with good fundamentals. We have to do a good job of trying to get the ball out on time when we're supposed to. And, you know, you pick your spots when you're going to try to do something and hold the ball a little longer, what have you, based on the play you're trying to accomplish. So, this is a big challenge. They present a lot of issues offensively on their own. And so, seeing them on the same field, obviously will be difficult, but, you know, we're hard at work trying to figure out how to create some offense against their whole group. And, you know, but they'll definitely be a challenge.
Sounds like McDaniels is sweating them a little bit, as you should, right? Like, you should be up at night scheming against these two. And he brought up kind of like none of them groundbreaking, but the three things is just being fundamentally sound on the quarterback, being able to get the ball out, and then coaching around him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's basically it, right? Like, the guys we do have, you got to be fundamentally sound. Carr, you got to know that there's a ticking time bomb running at you. And we as the coaches got to understand our strengths and weaknesses and where those bad boys are.
We got to have like one or two plays for each personnel package in our hip pocket ready. Once we go out there, Mac's taking a break. It's only Bosa. Mac's taking a break this play.
Five-step drop. Let's go deep.
Now we can run this play, right?
Yeah.
Bosa's taking a break now. We got to have those in our hip pocket. And I know that Josh McDaniels is going to do that. I know he's smart enough to be able to do that. But the thing is what
what are the Chargers going to run? Is that when they're going to run a blitz? Are they going to do a safety blitz, like something, a DB blitz type of thing to kind of counteract that? So hopefully we can block it and we go over the top. But that's when he talked about picking and choosing. I think that's what he's talking about, is having those plays. Carr has those plays in his pocket. And when he sees, oh, hey, you know what? Mac's not on the field, or Bosa's not on the field. It's only one of them. Maybe we can take our chance here.
I think this is going to be the offensive playing calling game that you've been thinking about. Run heavy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They had the worst run defense in football last season. How do you, you know, protect our quarterback from our bad O-line and those great edge rushers? Just run it, right? Just run the goddamn ball. Oh. So I think, yeah, I think this is going to be a, like, 25 carry day for Josh, like another, like, 15 carries for everybody else. A lot of screens, that screen game.
A lot of play action.
Yep.
That pro form offense, right? That the two backs, a tight end, and two receivers.
That's gonna be like a prime, like Chip Kelly, Oregon offense. You know what I mean? Like
Tecmo Bowl offense. You know,
just get the ball out to somebody in space, move around a lot.
Which, like, honestly, exotic runs. It's not too much different than what Kansas City does. They get the ball out quickly. They get the ball out in space. And they, your playmakers, you know, we talked about it. Reed knows how to get playmakers out in space, right? That's what we're looking to do here too. Only they have, you know, Mahomes, who can just kind of extend plays and throw the ball deep. So
that's them on defense, us on offense. Around. So we got Justin Herbert. Look, the media has already kind of ordained him the next guy, right? It's like Hill, Mahomes, and Herbert.
For sure, pretty much, yeah.
Is he gonna be the best quarterback the Raiders face this season?
There's that group. If he's not, it's not gonna be a big difference. Mm-hmm. You know, between Mahomes, Herbert, who else we playing this year?
Well, Russell Wilson, depending on what version of him we get, right?
I think it's gonna be a little, he's a step beneath those guys. Mm-hmm.
Stafford, won a Super Bowl.
The elbow. What is it? His elbow?
Yeah.
That elbow shot. He's on a pitch count in practice, dude. Like, that's how bad his freaking elbow is. Mm-hmm. Talking about, you know, quick passes and screens and shit like that. That's what the Rams are going to do.
Yeah.
Because he just can't. They have to keep him on a pitch count. I think that scenario or that circumstance is a lot more serious than it's being let on. When you have to put your quarterback on a pitch count during training camp, that means that the elbow isn't great. But I think he's going to be one of the top couple of quarterbacks that we face this year.
I think Keenan Allen's the most overrated wide receiver in football. Like, he's good, but everyone's putting him in like, oh, he's going to be top five in yards, top five. And I was like, what? Like that Keenan Allen?
He's a not as explosive Devontae Adams. He knows how to get open it quickly. He's a really crisp route runner. He's not going to be the guy that beats you deep. He's not going to have that type of – he's not going to take a screen pass down or a hitch and make a guy miss and go, you know, 40 yards. That's not him. Yeah. He's more of a possession intermediate guy, but he knows how to get open, man. He's a really good route runner.
This isn't an offense that scares me. Justin Herbert, Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams.
I don't know, man.
It's like just Joshua having Justin Palmer. Herbert. Gerald Everett, like,
just having Justin Herbert back there makes this offense dangerous.
Yeah,
because they have a really good offensive line too. The offensive line was an issue for them a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Now it's one of the best in the league.
Yeah. All right, we'll see. Ready to do some what a windbags?
Yes, sir.
Chris Velez, if Deshaun Watson can sexually assault a bunch of women and still play in this league, there's no reason why John Gruden should have been fired at all. This country is getting soft. So this was another good reminder that if John Gruden was like a returning Super Bowl champion head coach, this would have went very differently.
Yep.
But because he was coming off of a 500 season, a losing season, all his first round draft picks were terrible. He was kind of becoming a joke. A little different. Like, if Deshaun Watson was a third string running back for the Texans, this wouldn't have been a story.
He'd be driving a bus right now.
But because he was a top five quarterback at the time, now it's like, all right, how do we make this work?
Dude, Haslam even said it in the press conference. Is he here because he's a quarterback and a good? Yeah, of course he is. And I mean, that's kind of refreshing for someone to be, you know, that honest when he maybe shouldn't be. But yeah, man, Gruden just wasn't getting it done, man. He just wasn't getting it done. There was a lot of holes in his coaching. You know, I don't even want to waste any more mental energy on if Gruden's going to work or not. But I don't like to look at things like, well, so-and-so did this. Why can't he do that? Wrong is wrong. We know why one of them got a chance. The other one may not.
Silverwind. Cool little name. Alex Leatherwood has a chance to develop into a decent player, but it'll take 2 to 4 years from him to reach that potential, if he reaches that potential at all. The biggest draft bust for the Raiders, in my opinion, would be Jamarcus Jabba the Hutt Russell. Leatherwood was definitely a bust for the Raiders, but not the biggest bust ever. So a couple things. First off, like, I still believe Leatherwood could potentially be decent. Like, I still, again, if we had a true starting right tackle, I feel like we would have kept Leatherwood, not taking that cap it, and see if we can develop him. We would have had the luxury to say, okay, we can take on this project. Because we're so thin at his position, it's like everyone has to be able to start, and Leatherwood cannot. So we don't have the luxury of being able to, like, develop a dude, right? It's like, you know, it's like if you have, like, an all-pro quarterback, you can draft, like, a third-round quarterback and see if you can turn him into something over the next few seasons, right? That's not the case with our right tackle. So,
yeah, Jamarcus is by far the biggest bust. Money-wise, pick-wise, position-wise, by far. But
what made Leatherwood so unique was he didn't even make it to season two, which I don't think has ever happened for a first rounder. Like, I can't remember a first rounder not making it to season
two. Titans had a guy a couple years ago that didn't make it to year two.
It didn't have, like, legal problems or injury problems. Like, a dude who started, he started every single game last season, started, and then didn't even make the squad and was cut. Didn't make the 53 this season.
Yeah.
That, I think, is unprecedented. Like, Jamarcus Russell, the most money, number one overall. He still played a couple seasons. Jamarcus also, though, was at least Alex Leatherwood, another team took a shot at him. Nobody took a shot at Jamarcus. Nobody even bothered. No, that's like, also unheard.
That's why I think he's the biggest bust, because he never played in the league again. He never even got a workout, I don't think, with anyone.
Yeah.
Look, man. When you're going into a situation, you're looking at where are the big pieces that are broken, and are they worth being fixed, or do you just kind of patch it with something else? I think he was such a broken piece that it hurt. It was a tough decision at the end to cut him, but ultimately they didn't see the development mentally. They didn't see probably the want or the opportunity for him to develop mentally to be what, like you said, a ceiling, a decent, you know, okay, average. What does that mean? Average, okay, like an average right tackle, which is, we've already discussed, not too many teams are stoked on their right tackles. So just to be average at a position that is pretty average anyway, wasn't worth it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for change of scenery. It can be big for a lot of people. And so I think everyone just kind of agreed, like, all right, maybe you can develop into something somewhere at some time, but you're not going to develop into anything here right now. And we need a here right now guy. And that was not Alex Lowe.
No, it was not.
A Spivey, pay Darren Waller now. Why?
I don't know, man. Like, if,
what's up, buddy?
If Waller has the potential to have a huge breakout year.
Don't rub your pussy with me watching.
You love it. When he if he's able to do that, it's going to cost us more. I don't really think it's going to cost us too much more, because he's going to get more than Kittle already, because he's the next guy up. How much more? That's to be debated. There's not much more that Waller can do to solidify himself as the next man up. Like, he's the next guy up no matter what he does. He's the next guy up.
Even if he had another bad season? Let's say he gets hurt, misses a bunch of games. He's still going to be, like, demand to be, like, a top three paid tight end.
I think someone will play him because of his potential.
Okay. I still don't understand this whole idea. Like, he's got 2 years left on his deal. All right. Maybe there's some sort of middle ground where you pay him this year, some money you're going to pay him next year. This whole like, all right, extend him. 5-year deal. Top three tight end right now. Do it. It's like,
do it now.
So we just, every single day we talk about how bad our line is. Like, let's put some resources in there. I don't know. All right. Well, that's it for us. Next time you hear from us, it'll be post game Sunday, week one, Chargers Raiders in Los Angeles. You gonna be able to do the post game?
Nah, I won't be able to do it, man. I got a little something, the family thing to take care of.
All right, so it might be me solo, might be me and Rory. Maybe I'll get a special guest. Who knows? But we will be doing a post game show because it's season, baby.
Yeah,
real baby. Football. Real football's happening.
It starts real. Sunday.
It's so real. Until then, knock on wood if you're with me.